Chapter 8 Judgment of the Phoenix. Fabius slumped into his restraint throne aboard Alconex's personal gunship, Phoenician's Blade, eyeing the real-time hololithic projection of their destination. The flickering image of the demon world rotated slowly, blurts of nonsense information scrolling upwards to either side. It had been more than 10,000 years since he'd last been here. Time had not improved it. They had entered Harmony's orbit 12 Terran standard hours earlier, after being escorted through a crude network of orbital defense arrays by a flotilla of salvaged gunships and assault fighters. The Vesalius waited amid the inner circumference of the network, its hull bathed in periodic sensor sweeps as the mindless drones that controlled the orbital arrays scanned it for any sign of treachery. He had been allowed to bring no one with him, no bodyguards, not even an assistant. For the moment, his ship still belonged to Alconex, or Eidolon, rather. It seemed unlikely that was going to change in the near future. He distracted himself with a vitals scan. Information slid across the inside of his visor. The chirurgeon gave an almost petulant hiss as it found nothing wrong with him. The degeneration had not yet started, but he could feel it like the phantom ache of a missing limb. A kernel of rot, waiting for the right moment to flourish and consume this body, as it had all of the others. In a way, the anticipation of the inevitable pain was less bearable than the pain itself. Even hale and healthy, he second-guessed every movement, every flutter of his heart or unfamiliar sensation that passed through him. He knew from long experience that if he pushed himself to the edge of his capabilities, the degeneration would flourish that much quicker. Moderation was his only ally. Conserve, conserve, conserve. Hoard his strength like a miser, so that he might eke a few more centuries out of the corpus he wore. It was a process of diminishing returns. The degeneration began earlier with every new body. Soon, this one would begin to break down, as all the others had. He would need stims and opiate mixtures to maintain his equilibrium until it was time to seek new flesh. But not yet. A few decades, perhaps a century. He had some time. Time to complete his work. Time, perhaps, to find a cure. He'd thought, hoped, the Eldari would have one. Though they had since degenerated, they'd once had a knowledge base far in excess of humanity's own. He'd picked the bones of their extinguished empire, but to no avail. So far, nothing had worked. His experiments with wraithbone cultivation might yet reveal something of use, but he held out little hope. The best he could do was buy time, just a few more centuries, to perfect his new men, to give them the best chance of survival. And now, to add insult to injury, he had to deal with this interruption. He did not fear for his life, such as it was, but the time. He was losing time. He pushed the thought aside and turned his attentions back to the hololithic projection. The gunship shuddered slightly as it pierced the stratospheric veil and dropped into a suborbital trajectory. Harmony was a broken world. It was but the ghost of the hellish paradise it had once been. The projection showed that parts of the crust had separated from the core, and the planet shuddered with massive, intermittent tectonic upheaval like a wounded animal bleeding fire into the void. Striated scar lines marked its circumference, the red-blasted remains of once mighty Mechanicum city-states. But it was the largest wound in the world's hide that attracted Fabius's eye.
"Canticle City," he muttered.
"Not so beautiful now," Alconex said.
He sat across from Fabius, his sword across his knees. His warriors sat to either side of him, their eyes never leaving Fabius. He wondered what they thought he was going to do, trapped aboard their vessel as he was.
"It was never beautiful. It was barely passable at the best of times."
Fabius watched the ruins of the city swell in the hololithic feed as the gunship descended through the fiery atmosphere. Proximity alarms sounded every so often, and he heard the faint thud of autocannons. Sporadically, there came a sound like the rattling of claws across the hull. There was more than dust in the skies of Harmony. Targeting runes flashed across the projection, alerting the gunship's passengers to the fact that their descent was not unobserved.
Contact, echoed the voice of the servitor hardwired into the pilot's compartment. Transmitting verification codes.
The hollow voice cascaded over the Voxlink, accompanied by a brief blurt of binary gibberish.
Have we come all this way, only to be blown out of the sky?
Fabius's grip tightened on Torment's haft. His hearts sped up, straining slightly in their traces. He called up a bio readout, studying his vitals as they scrolled along the interior of his helmet's visor with a dispassionate eye. Still strong. No discernible fluctuations. There would be, soon enough. But for the moment, he was strong enough to walk away from a crash landing.
Your ending will not be so gentle, Spider. Of that you can be sure, Alkanex said. But no, Eidolon is simply cautious. We have enemies, after all, thanks to you.
Fabius snorted.
I had some help in that regard.
Alkanex sat back and said nothing. Even when they'd landed, he said nothing. He merely gestured for Fabius to stand. They trooped out of the gunship and down into the dust of a dead world. They'd landed in a cleared plaza, surrounded by barely functioning sentry guns, which whirred and clicked, tracking every movement. Everything was red. Not like rust or blood, but the dull, sore red of inflammation. The atmosphere was in upheaval, and there was still dust in the air, several millennia after Abaddon's assault. Canticle City spread out around them, an uneven spillage of ruined structures rippling outwards from the upright hulk of a warship. The Talok's shadow cascaded across the ruins, carried by the solar wind, which stripped the ruins of colour and strength. The Talok had been a mighty vessel, forged in the fires of the Great Crusade. What was left of it rose an impossible distance above what was left of the city, tall enough to reach the heavens. Up close, the warship did not resemble what it had once been. It was simply a wide, high tower of jagged metal and buckled hull plates rising over the districts it had toppled with its arrival. Whole structures had been uprooted and hurled in all directions, or else obliterated in their entirety. Towers and defense emplacements lay scattered about like toppled gravestones. Clouds of dust and water vapor collected about the ship at odd points, obscuring whole sections. Flocks of things that were not quite birds roosted in the high places, and their discordant song drifted down to those below. A shantytown had sprouted in the impact crater and overflowed the walls of gouged crust and soil. Despite Abaddon's best efforts, life yet persisted here, and in the remains of the once proud Mechanicum city-states. The Mechanicum had abandoned Harmony not long after the Emperor's children, leaving it to the lost and the dead. Like the spear that had killed it, the city had been magnificent, an ever-expanding work of art. Minarets of bronze and gold topping towers of black jasper and lapis lazuli, heavy with gilded voxcasters wrought in the shape of singing demons, rising above slab-roofed cathedral communes. He remembered the sound of pilgrims arriving at the great southern gates in their thousands, their voices raised in hymns of praise to malign gods. The omnipresent whine of Mechanicum flyers, flying precise routes between the cities of their masters and their masters' masters. Now, the only sound was static. The harsh rustle of impact-scrambled frequencies against the electronic frame of the Vox network. Abaddon's spear had disrupted more than just the physical. It had ruptured the ether itself. Snatches of old signals and panicked messages from the day of the attack intruded on the Voxlink, making internal communication all but impossible. Despite this, Alkanex and his warriors moved in assured silence. They formed a phalanx about Fabius, trapping him in a cage of ceramite. They followed a straight avenue into the heart of the ruin. At intervals, they were met by decaying combat servitors, which lurched from broken doorways to scan them with hazy, sputtering senses before retreating into the dark. These were not the only guards, though they were the only obvious ones. The enhanced ore specs in Fabius's battleplate detected a dozen power armor signatures, moving all about them, out of sight. He said nothing. Let them think him blind and deaf, if they wished. He might need the advantage, sooner or later. The deeper they went into the ruins, the more abstruse it all became. Creeper vines of pale pink flesh clung tight to structures, and sullen, gawping faces were slathered across walls, eyes rolling blindly in drooping sockets. Half-formed Neverborn scratched and clawed at their surroundings, attempting to free themselves. Their efforts only grew more agitated as Fabius and the others drew close. A musky mist seeped between buildings, and indistinct shapes danced within it, entreating the Space Marines to join them.
Entropy, Fabius said, making the word sound like a curse.
Perfection, Alkanex replied. He reached out and tore a pink creeper from an archway. Something that might have been blood spurted from it and dripped down.
You planted the seeds of this garden, fleshcrafter. One would think you would appreciate it more.
He tossed the wriggling creeper to Fabius, who caught it. A brief scan revealed a familiar signature on its genetic pattern.
This came from one of my flesh vats, he said. How curious.
The things you create do not die easily, Spider. There are plenty of them still howling down there in the dark. Perhaps we will toss you to them before the day is out.
Fabius said nothing. The creeper clung tenaciously to life, squirming in his grip like a serpent. Tiny, circular mouths dotted its underside, and these flexed abominably. The chirurgeon took a sample, as it was programmed to do, and he tossed the writhing lump of meat aside. Now that he knew it was there, he saw more signs of his handiwork scattered about the ruin. Strange growths of fibrous meat squeezing up through the cracked pavement. Malformed creatures, simian-like and primitive, watching from the high places. And the biological sensory nodes, observing and recording all that passed beneath them, though the repository for those recordings had long since been destroyed. His facilities on Harmony had been extensive, larger even than those on Urum. By the end, nearly two-thirds of the city's substructure had been given over to his needs. In his absence, some of it had obviously done as he designed it to do. Persist. He felt a curious sort of pride. He had made his mark, and it endured, despite the best efforts of his enemies.
There, Alkanex said.
Fabius looked up. The structure, or what remained of it, looked familiar, even at a distance of several centuries. It sat close to the impact crater, and had obviously been nearly destroyed by the Talok's arrival. That it had not collapsed in on itself spoke to the surety of its construction. Fabius was escorted through a labyrinth of broken archways and semi-intact walls, all open to the red skies. Mutants huddled in the shadows, warming themselves before burning oil drums, watching the newcomers with dull eyes. Fabius could hear the rumble of many augmented voices echoing through the crumbling stones.
I thought I was here to meet Eidolon, Fabius said, as they navigated the maze.
Eidolon wishes to see you, Alkanex corrected.
And that's different, is it?
Much?
Alkanex stopped, turned.
Now, hold your tongue, Lieutenant Commander. Be silent until someone asks you to speak.
Fabius made to reply, considered, and gave a terse nod. Not so much due to the threat, but out of curiosity. This had all the elements of the opening to a performance. His armor's sensors had detected several scrambled pict feeds being fed back from the optic scanners of the servitors that had accosted them. Someone was watching every move they made, and had been since they'd arrived. He could almost smell the anticipation on the air. The sounds slipping from the maze's center had grown in volume. A roar of voices, like hounds baying at the scent of blood. Alkanex's pace quickened, and Fabius was forced to hurry to keep up with him. Around him, Alkanex's warriors did the same, moving swiftly, laughing, singing, one panting like a dog. At last,
They came to an archway, higher than all of the others. The great steel doors were covered in lewd carvings, shaped by the hands of demon-possessed artisans. The carvings seemed to flex and writhe as the two abhuman slave beasts crouched beneath them, moved to force the large doors open. The doors swung inwards, ancient hinges screeching in protest. Beyond the doorway, there was only ruin and red sky. The heart of the structure burst open and hollowed out like a gutted corpse. Alkanek stepped through, and a rumble of voices swept down and back through the doorway, as if in greeting. Fabius was herded through by Alkanek's warriors, a condemned man on his walk to the gallows.
"Behold, for I have brought thee a king with a head of gold," Alkanek roared. "Behold, the prodigal brother returned to the embrace of kin and kind."
He turned lightly, arms spread. Fabius squinted against the harsh glare of the sputtering lumens strung from the cracked heights of the makeshift amphitheatre. A howl, almost solid in its force, went up. The sound buffeted him, threatening to drag him under. There were cacophony above, and worse things besides. Massive, twisted shapes that could only exist where the warp bled over into the hard corridors of reality. They stood above him, crouched on broken walls or standing atop shattered columns. All wore robes of pristine white threaded with gold over their battle plate. Hoods covered their heads, and in some cases they wore golden masks wrought in the image of leering, androgynous demons. Others glared down at him, their faces unhidden. He did not recognize them. All save one. A crude throne had been crafted atop the most stable section of ruin, a dais of substructure and heat-warped rebar, and upon it sat the Lord Commander Primus of the Emperor's Children, Eidolon, Master of the Eternal Song and the Auric Hammer. Eidolon, firstborn of the Cacophony and first vizier to the Phoenician. Eidolon the Headless. Eidolon the Reborn. He accrued titles the way a gambler accrued debts. Eidolon had not changed much in the centuries since Fabius had last seen him. His battleplate was a chemical-scarred riot of colour, its facets carved into suggestive shapes. His mangled scalp was shorn smooth, save for a single cascade of colourless, brittle hair that tumbled across the ornate vents and amplifiers wired into his armour. His face looked as if the flesh were too loose to hang properly on a skull that was no longer structurally sound, and his eyes were opaque orbs. Power cables studded his head and throat, feeding back into his armour, and these sparked and twitched like serpents. His thunder hammer rested across his lap as he sprawled back in the throne.
"Hello, brother,"
he called down, his voice a harsh reverb buzz.
"Welcome home." "I would say that it is good to be back, but we both know that's a lie," Fabius said.
As he spoke, the audience fell silent. He pushed past Alkanex and stepped fully into the light of the lumens.
"What is this? Why am I here?"
Eidolon heaved himself to his feet. A movement that should have been awkward due to his bulk was anything but. There was an unnatural grace there that spoke of great changes within him. Fabius studied the Lord Commander Primus and wondered how much of the warrior he'd once conspired with was left in that husk.
"You are here because I wished it, because we wished it." "And who is we?"
Fabius made a show of looking around at the masked and robed figures. Most were in power armor, though there were a few who were not. Some were more and less human than the Chaos Space Marines they stood among. Sensor baffles were mounted among the ruins, preventing him from identifying anyone by their armor signatures.
"Surely poor Kasparos mentioned us to you before you so cruelly betrayed him to the Eldar,"
Eidolon said. Given the state of his face, it was hard to tell if he was smiling or not, but Fabius suspected that he was.
"Kasparos Telmar was a true and faithful brother, unlike you, Fabius," And he paid the price for trusting you, a price most of us have paid at one time or another. Is that what this is, then? A gathering of those who feel wronged by me? If so, I'm surprised that there aren't more of you. Our brothers were ever quick to take offense over the smallest of slights.
A mutter swept their ranks, and he wondered how many of them had known he would be here. Hands fingered weapons. He knew only Eidolon's authority prevented some among the masked congregants from attacking him. Eidolon chuckled, and the air hummed with static.
Our membership is more exclusive than that. We are the remnants of a once proud legion, the masters and commanders of an army like no other, broken on the reefs of your hubris. We are the Phoenix Conclave, and we rose from the ashes of the fire you set, Lieutenant Commander Fabius.
Another growl of voices, low and steady. Fabius frowned. Every eye was upon him. He could feel the heat of their disdain.
One more name, added to an already unsteady pile of titles and sobriquets. It means nothing to me. But it should,
Eidolon said.
And it will. We rise like the phoenix and spread our wings over the eye and all that it contains. We see and understand our place in this galaxy with perfect clarity. Clarity? I see no clarity here, only childish obfuscation and ritual.
Fabius swept torment out, indicating the masked figures all around him.
Illuminate me, Eidolon. Tell me why I am here, not to join whatever revels you have planned, I think.
Eidolon planted his hammer on the ground.
And you would think wrong. Our father, Fulgrim, sleeps, and in his sleep he sent to me a messenger, a lovely creature who danced so pleasingly, and in her dancing passed to me a message from our father.
Fabius hesitated.
What was her name?
He asked, thinking of what Igori had told him earlier about her own dreams. Was this another of Melusine's games, or something more sinister? Eidolon smiled and sank into a crouch on the edge of the dais, leaning on the haft of his thunderhammer.
I do not know, but she told me to gather those who still have the courage of their convictions, those who still burn with the old fire, those who still know yearning, who still seek perfection. And this is all you could find? A few dozen old friends?
Fabius laughed, but the sound was forced. Eidolon was lying. But why? And about what? He pushed the question aside.
No wonder you sent Flavius to strong-arm me, if this is the best you could do. Fulgrim once conquered a world with but six of us,
Alkanex said. What might we do with 100, even if one of them is you? Fabius glanced at him.
It was 7, and I hesitate to consider it. But Eidolon is not Fulgrim, and I have no interest in playing soldier.
He looked around.
Perfection. You say that word as if it has any meaning for you beyond indulgence.
He looked back at Eidolon.
What perfection do you seek? The only kind that matters. The natural state of the universe is entropy, and we are one with that entropy. We follow it to its ultimate end. With every act of excess, we further break down the bonds between what is and what could be, between the imperfect and the perfect. With every exquisite sensation, we add more heat to the phoenix's nest. Birth, death, and rebirth. That is the nature of this universe.
Eidolon looked around, a crooked smile rippling across his lumpen features.
We are the sparks of time's cleansing flame, brother. We are the all-consuming fire, and only in that fire can perfection be found.
A raucous cheer went up at these words. Even among decadents such as these, faith was the strongest vice. The need to be a part of something greater was an addiction as insidious as any other, and harder to shake than most. Fabius watched his brothers cheer their own destruction and spat on the ground. Silence fell at the gesture. Eidolon alone seemed amused. He studied Fabius for a moment, as if preserving him for posterity. Then he laughed.
Always so quick to dampen the blaze of enthusiasm, eh, Fabius? What you call enthusiasm, I call stupidity.
Fabius looked up at the hateful gazers glaring down at him.
Never have I seen cattle so enamored of the slaughter. You shame Lorgar's fanatics with your fervor for meaningless rhetoric.
Better fervor than dead-eyed resignation, a voice called down.
Better to take joy in the last moment than to wallow in misery for eternity. Funny words coming from you, swordsman. I recognize your voice from here, eternal one. No, no, keep your mask on. I have no wish to see that patchwork countenance of yours.
He looked around.
Eternity, he says, as if I am not the only one among you for whom death is an abiding concern. Your last moments stretch unbearably long, brothers. I have no doubt that I will perish, and gladly, long before the least of you.
Only you would take pride in such imperfection, clone lord.
Another voice echoed down. Inhuman and rasping, like something with alien vocal cords attempting to approximate human speech. Nonetheless, another familiar voice, another old friend turned enemy. Then that was what they all were, in some sense.
Only you would cast your weakness in our faces as if it were a strength.
And why not?
Fabius turned.
My weakness is strength. I have true purpose, unlike you fools. Look at yourselves. Were you truly so bedazzled by Fulgrim as all that? Are we like Angron's murder dogs now, ready to hurl ourselves on his pyre without hesitation? Are we Horus's whelps, bereft without our father to hold our hands? Fulgrim is the Phoenician, and we are his sons,
Eidolon said lazily.
And we may do quite well without him for a long time.
Fabius looked up at the Lord Commander Primus.
Are you so eager to lose your head to one of his tantrums a second time, Eidolon?
Eidolon touched his throat, the look of sly contemplation sliding from his face. Even now, the thought of his death held a power over him. Fabius smiled.
Yes. How long will you keep it this time, do you think? And without me there to sew it back on? I have kept it long enough. Fulgrim sleeps, but he will stir soon enough. And when he spreads his wings, the galaxy will burn. All that is imperfect will be reduced to ash and forgotten in the blazing world to come.
Eidolon stood.
That may well include you and that carnival of monsters you travel with, Fabius, unless your common sense reasserts itself soon. Is that it? Is that why I'm here? So that you can deliver some vague warning and an even vaguer threat? If I'd wanted that, I would have stayed with the Harlequins. Warnings and threats? No, too late for those, I think.
Eidolon pushed himself to his feet and swung his thunderhammer out so that it pointed towards Fabius.
No, Fabius, this is to be your gauntlet.
Fabius stared up at him.
You cannot be serious, he said contemptuously.
Eidolon smiled.
It is what is demanded before you can rejoin us. You must face a test of worthiness, and a punishment for dereliction of duty. That is our way, Fabius. All will be forgiven if you survive.
Forgiven? I need no forgiveness.
Fabius found himself shouting.
And certainly not from fools like you.
He turned in a tight circle, hand dropping to his needler. He froze as Alkanex signaled and his warriors raised their weapons. The amphitheatre erupted in shouts and bellows. Fabius tensed, prepared to signal for a rush of stimulants. If he could get past them and out into the city, he might be able to escape and signal the Vesalius.
"Give me an excuse, spider," Alkanex said, one hand on the hilt of his sword.
"Peace, Prefect Flavius,"
Eidolon called down. He raised his hammer.
"All of you, be silent! A fiend does walk abroad, and it is to him that this onerous duty falls."
Eidolon swept out a welcoming hand.
"Let us greet him! With all due ceremony and joy."
Fabius turned as someone, something new entered the arena. A troop of mutants, their eyelids and mouths sewn shut, and their bodies hidden by heavy robes, shuffled into view, hauling something behind them. It drifted into the light amid a web of chains. One by one, the mutants released the chains they held and retreated back into the dark as their prisoner continued to float forward.
"What is this?"
Fabius said, hand still resting on his needler.
"Some say he is the last of the old lodgers left, the last priest of Davin."
Eidolon gave a ghastly smile.
"Or he was. What he is now is a matter of some debate among those given to such wearisome indulgences. For the moment, however, he is ours. You should feel honored, my brother. I went to no small effort to acquire a fitting judge for you."
The withered, wizened thing in its cloak of chains had been a man once, or perhaps a woman. After a certain point, it became hard to tell, short of an autopsy. He looked as if he had been stretched out of proportion, every limb and digit dragged to twice its own length. A great cage, bent in the shape of a bull's head, or a goat's, rested on the two wide shoulders, imprisoning the stretched, flattened skull. It hung suspended from nothing, the ends of its many chains hovering above it like the heads of a hydra. The chains did not rattle or clink. It was as if the thing drank in all sound, all light.
"All hope,"
the newcomer said, through cracked and threadbare lips. His paper-thin eyelids peeled back, revealing eyes empty of colour and vitality.
"And why not?"
he murmured.
"What is there new to see under all the suns? What was shall be again, and what is shall inevitably end."
With agonizing slowness, he brought his skeletal hands together in a parody of prayer. The chains loosened and fell link by link to the ground, throwing up a cloud of dust.
"Perhaps you will show me something new."
He laughed, a dry, rustling sound, like dead leaves caught in a breeze. Fabius looked up at Eidolon.
"Is this individual to be my executioner?"
Eidolon chuckled.
"Only if the gods are not on your side."
His smile threatened to split his lumpen features.
"Then you don't believe in gods, do you?"
Fabius grimaced. The withered thing had drawn closer while he was distracted, floating as if he weighed no more than a feather.
"Keep your distance or take your chances," Fabius said softly. "I'll not die as meekly as that."
"Perfection, Fabius,"
the creature said, in a voice like sand rasping against stone.
"That is your vice, a scalpel bright yearning. Ah. It makes me ache to feel it. Eidolon promised me a banquet of perfection, and he has truly delivered.
And who are you, then? Name yourself.
I am the whetstone of desire. I am the asker of questions. I am the questor.
I have never heard of you.
Of course you have,
the questor said.
We have met many times, and we'll meet again before the last sun sets and the galaxy goes dark forevermore. I was with you in the temples of the lair, and I sat at your elbow as you raised up the first children of your genius from the nutrient soup. That you could not see me is no matter. I was there, and I saw you.
Fabius felt a flicker of unease as the pale gaze pierced him through. The chirurgeon twitched as if it shared his uncertainty. The questor's smile was like a scalpel grating on bone, and he clapped again. The world seemed to shake. One by one, the sensor feeds in Fabius's armor went dark, and its confines became stifling. Quickly, he tore loose his helmet. The air felt still and heavy, not from the expected atmospheric pressure, but instead... what? It was as if the world had somehow stopped in its rotation, and everything else had clattered to a sudden, irresistible halt. Fabius looked around. The red of the world had faded to a rusty haze, and the members of the Phoenix Conclave were as statues. Even Eidolon stood frozen in mid-gloat, and Alkanex still poised to spring. Fabius turned, his breath straining in his lungs and billowing like fog from between chapped lips. Sweat beaded and turned to ice on his face. He felt overtaxed, as if he'd run for days.
"What have you done?"
he demanded. His words fell flat, the echo stifled at conception.
"Some trick of witchery."
"Nothing so crude. Merely a moment stretched to its utmost."
The questor floated closer.
"To my perceptions, all time is thus. A collection of eternal moments, one bleeding into the next with infinite slowness."
"Why?"
"This is the moment of testing, the moment your hearts are weighed against the phoenix's feather. Are you not curious at the outcome?"
"Not remotely. I know my worth, and I know my crimes. This court holds no jurisdiction over me."
Fabius straightened, trying to slow his heart rate. His muscles strained against unknown pressures. It was as if he stood at the bottom of a vast ocean and the weight of thousands of fathoms pressed down on him.
"Its jurisdiction extends far beyond your ability to conceive, alchemist. You have committed crimes of such monstrous elegance that even the gods themselves grow uneasy. Look, see, they sit in judgment of you."
A too long finger drifted upwards, and Fabius followed the gesture. He looked up, and something looked down. It was not a face, for a face was a thing of limits and angles, and what he saw had neither. It stretched as far as his eyes could see, as if it were one with the whole of the sky in the firmament above. Things that might have been eyes, or distant moons, or vast constellations of stars looked down at him, and a gash in the atmosphere twisted like a lover's smile. It studied him from an impossible distance, and he felt the sharp edge of its gaze cut through him layer by layer. There was pain in that gaze, and pleasure as well. Agony and ecstasy, inextricable and inseparable. With great effort, he tore his gaze away.
"There is nothing there,"
he snarled, his teeth cracking against each other. His heart stuttered, suddenly losing their rhythm. He pounded at his chest as internal defibrillators sent a charge of electricity shrieking through him.
The chirurgeon flooded his system with tranquilizers, and he tapped shakily at his vambrace. A secondary solution of mild stimulants joined the tranquilizers, stabilizing him. He ignored the urge to look up. There was nothing there. Nothing at all.
"There is nothing there,"
he said again, tasting blood.
"There are no gods, only cold stars and the void."
The pressure increased. Something whispered deep within him. It scratched at the walls of his mind, trying to catch his attention. He ignored it.
"No gods," he repeated. "Random confluence of celestial phenomena, interdimensional disasters echoing outwards through our perceptions. I think, therefore I am. They do not, so they are not."
He met the questor's bland gaze unflinchingly.
"Gods are for the weak. I am not weak."
The questor nodded expectantly.
"No."
Then, after a moment, he said,
"But you are ill."
The words quavered on the air, and floating particles of dust congealed about them, making strange shapes. The questor floated through them, dispersing them before they had a chance to become more distinct.
"I am dying,"
Fabius said simply, steadying himself on the solid ground of undeniable fact.
"Fruit rotting on a soured vine. If that is the limit of your awareness, I fear this will be a short trial."
The questor's loose features wrinkled unpleasantly. Fabius thought the entity was trying to smile.
"Time is a construct of an organic mind."
Fabius arched an eyebrow. He dabbed at the blood on his lips.
"I suspect that was not an invitation to debate."
"Your illness is also a construct."
"Explain,"
Fabius said flatly.
"You have given it a name, a method, a desire. It is a never-born without a mind, and you are its cocoon."
The questor gestured idly, drawing several stones from the ground and causing them to crumble and splinter without touching them. The entity waved long fingers, and the debris spun in a slow, fractal pattern.
"Or it will be in time."
Fabius watched the spinning stones, trying to ignore how much their shape reminded them of what watched him from above.
"How much time?"
"Eons. Moments. Time is a..."
"Construct. Yes, you said. You are lying. The blight is nothing more than a collection of cellular abnormalities."
"It is more than that."
"It is not. I've been studying it for the better part of 10,000 years.
"And you are no closer to divining its origins than you were at the beginning of your studies."
The questor was close enough now that Fabius could detect the eldritch stink radiating from his gaping pores, like the smell of a plasma-scorched hull plate mingled with the odor of rancid milk.
"It is complex, evolving."
"The sickness in you is deeper than bone, deeper than blood and bile."
The questor circled him slowly, the tips of his feet tracing abominable sigils in the dust of the dead city, broken stones floating about him like an asteroid belt.
"It bites at the roots of you, gnaws at your heart's last gleaming. It is the fire of your ending and the light of your beginning."
"Pretty words to describe an overly industrious cancer cell. To quote a long-dead scrivener, my life, a tragedy, and its hero, the conquering worm."
Fabius followed the questor with his eyes. It was better than looking up, though not by much.
"There is nothing deeper than blood and bone. We are meat, and what comes after meat, nothing more."
"And what is the motive force of meat?"
the questor asked, stretched limbs twitching.
"What drives the cogwheels of thought and desire? If meat dances, where then does the song originate from?"
I know the answer you want, Fabius said.
His eyes rolled in their drooping sockets, and his wide mouth rippled. It might have been an expression of humor.
It is the same answer your sort always wants, but it is a lie.
What is a lie but truth's shadow?
Fabius laughed, but the sound was weak in the unnatural silence.
More words, meaningless ones at that. Then I expected nothing more from a warp-addled creature like yourself.
Even as he said it, the quaestor was surging towards him with impossible swiftness. Long fingers caressed his features. Fabius tensed, torment snarling in his grip, demanding to be put to use. But he restrained himself, fought the urge to strike. Something told him it would do no good.
I was with you aboard Luganath as well, the quaestor said softly. I saw all that you saw. Your destiny is a fractal of impossible complexity. The shadows of empires past and those yet to be seek to simplify that pattern for their own ends. You and those like you are nothing more than weapons aimed at the future.
The quaestor leaned close, eyes blazing like twin suns.
The only question is, which future? By whose hand will you be aimed?
Fabius blinked. The quaestor now floated some distance away, a faint smile on the sagging face. The world had resumed its normal course. Sound and light sped up, bruising his senses. He felt a weight on his heart and clutched at his chest plate. He risked a quick glance. The sky was red and empty, of all save clouds and dust. The quaestor spoke.
How long will you persist, Fabius?
Until my work is done.
The answer came automatically, instinctively. The answer hung on the air for a moment before fading. The quaestor's smile widened. It looked up, pallid gaze roaming across the assembled sons of Fulgrim.
I have asked. He has answered. I find no guilt in him. The trial is at an end.
A great uproar followed these words, shouts of disbelief and cries of anger. They had come to see him punished, and it seemed that desire was to be unfulfilled. Fabius felt no satisfaction. He yearned to smash the quaestor's smug face, to batter the demon thing into bloody tatters. Its words pulsed through him, reducing him. He wanted to silence it. Instead, he forced the anger down. There was a time and a place to give vent to such emotions, and here and now was not it.
The quaestor has spoken,
Eidolon said, his voice carrying across the ruin.
And his judgment is final. Lieutenant Commander Fabius is hereby absolved of his crimes against the Legion. Any who wish to challenge him must be of equal or superior rank. And that isn't anyone here save me.
He grinned crookedly, empty gaze sweeping over his assembled chieftains and warlords. He crooked a finger towards Fabius and turned.
Come, brother. It has been too long since last we spoke, legionary to legionary.
Fabius followed him out of the arena. He felt the eyes of the quaestor on him the entire way.